Welcome to the Surround the Corner podcast. Today is Monday, January 26, 2009, and I am attending the TASA 2009 Midwinters Conference. This is your host, Miguel Gulen. This morning I woke up around 5:30 a.m. and headed over to the TASA Midwinters Conference in Austin, Texas. As I sat at a table and watched superintendents walk by, watching the Texas Commissioner of Education joke with a group of administrators sitting at a table, I was amazed at how different this conference is from the Texas Computer Education Association conference that takes place every year, but also how similar. The main difference is seeing so many people I didn't know that play a vital role in the future of K-12 education in Texas. Technology was notably absent, except for the occasional admin with a mobile phone handy. A few sported an iPhone, snapping photos of each other as they stood together, then showing them off. They laughed as they did so, and I had to smile at their enthusiasm. If only their technology directors could see them now. Sometimes I wonder if superintendents just need a safe environment to shed their technology phobia, the opportunity to learn among equals. In this session on reinventing learning, I was captured by a clever title. When I arrived, I was enchanted by the idea of how we need to redesign our learning environments. For a short time, I forgot that I was at the TASA Midwinters Conference rather than at TCEA, and that the workshop I attended was about physical learning spaces rather than virtual spaces. The core question that the presenters, Jeff Sharp and Shannon Burke, asked is one that each of us should ask as we design both physical and virtual learning spaces. There are lessons for virtual learning environment designers as well as physical ones. Even though I knew that I would learn much, I didn't imagine that I'd get some insights into virtual learning. I hope you'll share your thoughts in the comments about this podcast and what insights you gained. Here's Shannon and Jeff. Thanks to both of them for allowing me to podcast them.
Good morning. Thank you all for being here. I'm Jenna Berg, and I am an education design strategist in Cambridge Strategic Services, which you may be wondering what that means. I do too sometimes, but basically what that means is that I do strategic planning facilitation for part of my life, and the other part I do transformation of learning environments and work with sometimes facilities and architects like Jeff. Jeff and I work together on projects to look at how we can redesign the environment to meet the learning goals of the particular industry we're working with.
My name is Jeff Sharp. I'm the creative director for SHW Group. And as Shannon said, one of my roles is to bring thoughts and research on learning, collaboration, creativity, and merge that with the physical environment. So as we talk with institutions and different clients, how we can make the most of the physical environment. And one of the things we want to do today is share some of those things with you in terms of the environment being a tool for learning and for collaboration.
Can you hear us in the back? Can you hear us? We don't have my focus. Awesome, thank you. Well, you know who we are, so we just want to hear a little bit about who the audience is. This is kind of an integrated topic, so we want to know who you are. So just if you could let us know how many people in the audience are kind of on the instructional curriculum side of the district. Okay. Awesome. How many are kind of operations or IT or facilities or where is it? Okay. And the superintendents? Okay. Awesome. Integrated audience for an integrated topic. Beautiful. So what I want you to do is just for a minute think about why you choose this session, right? And you can share that with someone next to you, what you hope to get out of it. And we're going to hear a little bit of that, and then we're going to get started on what we have to share. If you don't have a handout, raise your hand. So think for just a minute about why you came and what you want to get out of this session. Thank you. Okay, so anybody want to share what your expectations are? Good for us if we can hear what you want, and then maybe we can help tailor or customize what we're doing with that. Anybody have something you want to share? Yes, ma'am. Okay, awesome. So how to change some old spaces into a new learning environment without having to build a new building. Nobody has extra cash lying around the school districts right now. That's actually one of the things that we want to address. So that's great. Thank you. It's you. Anybody else? Something like that? Different? Yes, ma'am.
I wanted some ideas on how to change the learning environment to get it more exciting for students.
Okay. Awesome. So making the learning environment more engaging for students. Great. We're going to talk to you a little bit about some things you can look at in the environment. Well, really everything we're going to talk about pretty much, right, Jeff? It's not that you would have to build a new building. It's all things that you can do inside the space that you already have, pretty much, right?
Yes.
So most of it will fit what you're saying, and we're trying to focus on things that are kind of cheap and easy, but that have a big impact. So we just want to tell you, first, why we care about this stuff, and then we're going to get into really kind of some factors that you can look at in the environment that we might want to address based on what the findings are out there and the research about what happens in the environment when you look at these things. And then we'll give you some real specific examples. Jeff will share several images of when you put this stuff together, what it can look like, and how that works. So my story about the learning environment began when I was a teacher, actually back in Jacksonville, Texas. We have some people from Jacksonville here in the audience today. And I was working with a group of students, and this is my first teaching job. And I was working with a group of students that had failed the exit exam three or more times. This is back when we had TOS. How many of y'all remember those days? The TOS days. Remember the first year that kids couldn't graduate if they didn't pass it? It was a big deal. There were thousands and thousands of kids all over the state that were in that situation. So my first teaching assignment was I had a group of students, and it was about a 25% of the graduating class, actually, that year that was in danger of not graduating because of that test. And I got them for their last semester. They had one semester left. They'd already failed the test three or more times. And when I walked in the room that I inherited, it was just a very traditional-looking classroom with desks and rows, one filing cabinet, one teacher desk, two pieces of chalk, and there you go, right? That was it. So not very welcoming, honestly. And I have had some learning style training. How many of you have had learning style training? Okay, so I'm looking at that environment thinking, not real exciting, not real engaging for students. What can I do? And so I started to manipulate that environment and change the design of the room and bring in some comfortable seating and change the lighting and try to fix that place up and make the students feel comfortable. And I talked to them about what they preferred in their environment. Allowed them to, back then we had Walkmans. Allowed them to listen to Walkmans and all this kind of stuff. So went through that semester and we had phenomenal results. All but two of those students were able to overcome what they hadn't been able to overcome in the past few years as they were taking that test. So then I went on to address that in a lot of situations after that, in AP English 4 classes, in a junior college, when I taught in junior college. So in every situation, making those changes in the learning environment, being sensitive to what was happening in the environment, made a big difference for students. I learned a lot from individual students and what they needed in those environments, and it really made a big difference. And it's something that I think we take for granted a lot of times as teachers, that it's not something that we pay attention to or we think that we can fix, but there are a lot of things that we can do about it. So it really works now in the role that we work in together, that background has really shaped that I believe in that power of the environment.
Well, my story is the opposite end of the spectrum. I've come from old professor of architecture years ago, and from an academic understanding of the environment. And today in my role as creative director, one of the things that I do is create environments, both psychological and physical, for people to discover their voice, to be creative, to discover ideas, both with our staff and our clients. And in the end, it is about understanding the tool that physical environment is to allow that to happen. You know, we start to think about where we bridge. We come, Shannon and I come from both ends together, about learning, the notions of learning, the notions of collaboration, creativity, and how the physical environment truly impacts that. And so together, what we do is really bridge those things and bring interest and understanding and research from the physical environment, the curriculum and learning, and bring those together, and that becomes a manifestation of both of those.
So we asked you, I think the first question that we had up on the board is in your handout. We asked you to think about where do you go? Like, think in your mind for just a few minutes. Where do you go when you really need to learn something that's hard and new? And what does that space look like? What does it look like? What is your, maybe your office or whatever? How do you create that space? And then if you want to think about that for a minute, and then think about how does that space that you would go to learn something new, how does that differ from your kids or your grandkids? Is there a difference? Do they like a different type of space when they're trying to process something new or different? And then how do those different types of environment differ from what we think of as a traditional classroom? Right? Are there differences there? Can you think of what some of those things are? So that's just what we want to think about. We want to think about if you can choose the environment, create the environment, what it looks like, and then if you're in a different environment, how can we manipulate that to match better? Right? Because we know that kids today, most of them would not prefer this type of environment. They might like something that looks a little bit more like this, right? So that's what we want to talk about, how you can turn that one that we saw into something more like this. Right.
What we know is that the environment profoundly impacts us intellectually, spiritually, emotionally. Our memory is connected directly with place, be it a walk, or a church, or a village green, or a town square, or this room, or a laboratory. And I think what we really talk about and investigate is the ideas of what that means to all people. Right? How do you create a tapestry, if you will, in the environment to allow all people to find their place within that? If it's from a nest, or climbing under a blanket, or sitting up in the stacks of a library, where is that place that happens? And so if you believe this about learners, and it's all about all learners, then the physical environment should be that. It should be, as I said, this weaving, this kind of tapestry of all these different places that people can find their own voice in a way. And so the spaces do exactly this. We know that learning is about a social process. It's about this conversation, isn't it? It's about that. And so the environment should be giving that kind of space and allowing for that to happen, both in terms of notions of ubiquitous technology and collaboration and all the tools that you need to do that. And in fact, a learning environment should be visceral. Right? It should touch the senses, right? Regardless if it's in a traditional classroom, an in-between space, a garden, the mall, an Apple store, are terrific learning environments. So what we talk about and what you'll see today, which we want to share with you, is this notion of designing about how spaces act. Not just how they look, but how they act. And if we start thinking about the qualities of learning and the qualities of the senses that allow people to be comfortable and find a space, just as you just went through a small exercise about where's that place that you go to learn of something difficult or to deal with something emotionally difficult. Where is that? What is the nature of that? What's it sound like? What's it feel like? And so that's how learning spaces are. It's not only just quantitative. It's qualitative, more important. And so when we can do that within very set budgets, of course, and within the constraints of existing buildings even.
So that's what we want to do. We want you to just invite you to think about spaces that you are in control of. Most of you in this room have really kind of control of the environment that you are asking the kids to come into or your employees to come into. So just thinking about those spaces and how you can reinvent those things. And this is what I was telling Jeff. I said, really, in education, there are not a lot of quick fixes, right? There are a lot of things that take a lot of time and energy and training and professional development and money and all that. But the environment is really one of those things, you know. Let's talk about the difference between changing what we're going to tell you about and implementing RTI, for instance, right? And what that cost and energy and time and training and all that is versus what we're talking about. And really, you really don't have to do a lot of training for people to understand this. It doesn't take very long for people to catch on. So we just want to invite you, as we're talking about different things, to think about spaces that you can manipulate and how you might be able to use some of this in those spaces. Yeah. So here are the five things we're going to talk about in regards to the environment. So we want just to make sure that we're looking at the lighting, the color around in the environment, sound, furniture, interactivities, and how that all works together. And some of the things we want to share with you is that light can have a profound impact. For instance, if you think about it, when you walk into a room, if you walked into this room and we had the lights turned down, lower, it would have had a different impact on your mood, right? On the mood of the room as you come in the room. How many of you in the space that you thought about that you like to learn or process something new, the lighting is dimmer, kind of low light, okay? How many of you it needs to be really bright? Okay. So you can see that you have a preference for that, right? And the lighting does actually affect your mood. That's why restaurants use mood lighting and all those kinds of things. It affects attention. Actually, there are findings that the fluorescent light has an impact on attention deficit students, a negative impact on attention deficit students, that it actually impacts attention span. It impacts visual processing. A quick story about a student that we had gone into the computer lab back then. We had computer labs, and there were computers in the room. And we got in there, and he was just sitting there. And this was a kid that I wore a cap to school, you know, and was I getting in trouble for it? But what I learned is that those students, many times they're just trying to block out the light. Because younger age students need less light than adults. As you get older, you need more light typically because the lens of your eye gets thicker. So typically in a traditional classroom, the teacher has the lighting fixed for her preference or his preference, which is going to be more light than what the students typically need, generally need. So this student is just staring at the screen, and I'm like, Anthony, you need to work, you know, notes. And he said, well, I can't see anything. I'm like, well, it's right there. He says, I can't see it. So I just started dimming the screen, you know, the dimmer switch on the screen. And when it got to the point where I could hardly see it, I was like, oh, there it is. And it was just such a great time for me to say, wow, I need to be thinking about this, right? Because what's going to happen if they can't see it, they can't process visually, what's going to happen? Yeah, behavior problems. They're not going to do their work. They become a behavior problem. And I can tell you story after story about students that they found out the reason they were a behavior problem is because of something that was happening with the lighting and what they were trying to process during that time of day. And so it's just something to make sure that we pay attention to. It's been linked to achievement. Matching students to their lighting purposes has been linked to higher achievement, reading speed, and fluency. And all the research, by the way, is in your handout. We put a whole list of sources that you can go and look at where we got all this stuff. And also wellness. I think Jeff's going to talk a little bit about that.
Today, around the world, actually, lighting is used as a major influence in wellness and health environments. Not only CT labs like this and CT suites, but it's been found to profoundly impact the qualitative wellness of children and of patients in terms of recovery, the amount of medicines that they need after a procedure, and the like. This is not only happening, as you saw, the first one was in the Netherlands, but across the U.S. St. Jude's is doing this, a variety of other hospitals around the country are using lighting to impact the wellness of their patients. In a classroom, there's a variety of ways of doing it. There's one of the things that we look at, and most importantly, is the uniformity of light. In terms of color renditions, of lamp types, there's energy savings and the like. But how do you zone a classroom so that it gets the most impact on the teaching wall, for instance, or areas of activity? It goes into a tremendous amount of studies. It looks at it impacts and reduces the amount of eye fatigue that Shannon was talking about. The U.S. Navy actually has a study that shows that proper lighting can increase productivity over 28% within a given space and reducing the amount of errors as well. So there's a variety of very simple ways of doing that that cut energy costs, that create a far more impactful environment, both in the learning environment, formal learning environment, and otherwise.
And like Jeff said, color, you know, the intersection of color and light can make a difference because changing the color of the lighting, you know, can change the mood. It can change the visual processing ability. One of the things that I found very successful, this is a cheap, easy, quick fix, and that is just to take color transparency and cut them in quarters and pass them out to your teachers. By the way, they're okay to use on the tax if you've been using them in classroom instruction. And I can't tell you how many students I have seen go from not being able to be persistent with reading, like Jeff said, because of eye fatigue, to being able to read fluently and persistently throughout the length, have the stamina to read throughout the length of some of these standardized exams because of the color transparency, which changes the way the light's being filtered. Black on white is the hardest for them, is the hardest for the eye to process. And natural light is the best. A lot of classrooms, you don't have that option. But you can cover the light with something, fire retardant paper. You can give it to the individual student and let them do something different with the lighting that they're trying to process that information. And these are things I know that many of you are going, oh yeah, you know it, right? But we forget them. We forget to use them. And when we find a student that's having issues, sometimes we don't think about some of those easy and quick fixes. But again, this has been linked to in research studies, achievement, higher achievement, depending on the preference and the way that the light works with the students and that color interaction.
And again, not only in the medical sciences, but across work environment studies, learning environments, the impact of color psychologically is enormous. Very direct studies in terms of the impact of reds and blue lights and so on and so forth. And there's a variety of technologies to be able to do that, from paint, simple paint, to color sleeves and color gels and things like that that Shannon's referencing, and we'll show you some examples of those kind of installations.
I didn't say it that before, but the rose color, he's going to talk about blue, I know the rose color has been shown in studies to reduce hyperactivity. So just that color itself changing in the lighting has an impact on, and if you don't believe that, just try it, because I've done that. And you try it and you will see a huge difference in the way students' behavior responds under the different types of light. And another easy thing is just turning out part of the light in the room. You have the ability to have natural light in the room, or even if you don't, we could turn out a row of these lights, and it wouldn't impact your ability to see, but it would change the way that you're having to process using the light, using the amount of light.
Just to share very quickly, just the notion of blue light raising the serotonin impacting the body tremendously, and it also obviously is a softer light. It impact is far more influencing to older eyes and alike. So when we're talking about these environments, remember it's just not about our students, right? It's about staff, it's faculty, it's the entire body of a district and of an institution that's impacted by these notions, right? We're all learners in a way, and the environment impacts us in that way. I wanted to just briefly talk about this photograph on the right. Those walls are actually white. It's a white painted wall corridor, and what we did in this case is use very simple color sleeves on fluorescent lamps. The lamps are actually on the floor along the bottom there, and they're $15 each. Right, so we took standard fluorescent, straight ones instead of the U-tubes like these, and we're able to change the environment very simply by these little pieces of acrylic tubes. And literally, at the time they were $12. I think they're $15 now. And but you can change them out very quickly and experiment and play with that idea within a classroom, within a study space, within a corridor, within a lobby, and see what happens. Very, very simple to do. Now that we're in Austin, of course, we're going to have to talk about sound.
Yeah.
So,
as you know, sound. One of the things about sound I think that's interesting is if you study the effects of music on the brain, one of the things that it has the ability to do is create instant memory recall of an entire experience. And the reason why, of course, is because when you're processing with music, you're processing in your right brain's hemisphere, and that processes as a holistic experience rather than a piece by piece. Obviously, marketing people understand this, right? We all can get those little ditties in our head that they, whether you like them or not, that they stick with you. But we can use sound in a very powerful way in a classroom, in a learning environment, to create that. Plus, not just with the memorization or the recall, but also with just setting the mood, relaxation. How many of you know that with iPods, that kids are creating their own music, and that they're hooked up to that outside of school, how much of the time? A lot, right? Pretty much all of the time. So what's going to happen to the brain if you study, some of Marion Diamond's work, you study some of Bob Sylvester's work, some of those on what happens to the brain when that environment changes that much? What happens is this kind of retreat to fight or flight, right? It's like, okay, I'm not in my familiar, comfortable environment, and the brain is not able to really process as well in the frontal lobe. Plus, obviously, you would know now, all of the research has been done on Mozart and, the baby CDs and all that stuff, but there really is quite a bit that shows that depending on the types of sounds that you have in the room, certain kinds of music can relax, can help the brain move to the alpha state, help the brain process in the frontal lobe. So it's like the 60 beats a minute that correlates with the body's pulse rate that really makes a difference in how students are able to process. And again, you know, you can try it out. Actually, I think we're going to experiment on you.
We may, yeah. I think this first, you might... This might remind you of some of your classroom Tuesdays, right? Or at least what you perceive in your class. We're just going to roll through some of these for a moment.
Be aware.
Maybe a little newer classroom. Or playground. We're an awesome
man. I see trees of green, red roses too.
Getting memories. We're not letting that down.
Gone. All right, we can move on. Okay, that's the end of the show.
So how many of you had some kind of memory jolted by one or more of those songs? Okay. And how did it change your mood? Did you feel your mood changing in response to the type of music that was there? So it's a simple thing. Sorry. It's a simple thing, but it's, again, one of those things that you have to be conscious of. And, yeah, I'm certainly not advocating that we should let kids come in and listen to their music, right, in the room, because that's not necessarily appropriate in all cases, or maybe even in any case. But what I am saying is let's just pay attention to how sound can impact them and how we can use it to our advantage, right, when we're controlling that. One more thing I want to say about that is that typically the classroom is like this, right, where it's quiet, supposedly. But what we have learned is that it's never quiet for kids, right? They're hearing things in the quietness, and actually the quietness is louder and more distracting to them than anything else, and that's why you'll get a kid so often that, you know, is doing this, right? What are they doing? They're creating their own white noise, right, to block out the air conditioner and the sneezes and coughs and the scratching of the pen and those things that they're very sensitive to in that environment. So it really does make a huge difference to, again, take control of that and make a difference for the students in that way. The next one we want to talk about is furniture. And obviously furniture has a huge impact. We said that it can encourage or hinder mobility, right? I mean, how many times have you walked into a classroom? What is the typical classroom furniture? Right? Desks, and how are they typically arranged? In rows, right? So we know all of this about social learning theory and all that we know about how you actually learn better when you're interacting with others, when you're able to collaborate. Like, this is the worst setting, right, to sit and try to learn something. But when we have that set up like that, we're sending a message, right, when they walk in the room. The message is what? The message. How are you going to learn when you come in that room? Yeah, by yourself, right? You're going to learn by yourself. This is not encouraging you to interact with the people around you, right? You're going to sit in that seat. I've seen a lot of studies on what happens just physically when you put those bodies, right, in a desk where most of the body weight is centered on a couple inches of bone, right, in that desk. It's not the most comfortable place to be. But also, mobility is really important. We know, we learned from Mary Jensen, that you have to move a learner at least as often as the number of minutes that equals their age, right? So have we been in here 25 minutes? So in the classroom, we have to think about that, right? And the furniture makes a difference in how you're able to do that. It's even simply just moving the desks in a different way. Maybe you can't replace the furniture, but moving them in a different way can make a difference. But they need to move, and one of the reasons they need to move is because the CSF, cerebral spinal fluid that goes up and down the spine, it can only bring the nutrients, which the brain needs to process, can only bring those nutrients up and dump the waste if there's movement. That's how it works. So if we're not moving in that often, that's when you get into the veg state, right? You're not moving around. So it's very important for us to make sure we're safe probably in here, right, in a 55-minute presentation. But in the classroom, that's not going to be the case. We need to make sure that we're providing for that, and the furniture can make a difference in how that works.
So some of the things that we talk about with furniture and look at is not only is flexibility, the ease of use, the weight of it. Right? How many desks do we have that weigh 20 pounds? Or a chair that's almost impossible to move. And so that helps with the fluidity of space, the agility of that space as well, to reconfigure very quickly, and to help, you know, where we can actually leverage the students to do a lot of that. And so it's tremendously important, not only in the classroom, but also in your professional environments as well, to be able to do that, to come together, just to slide two chairs together or two tables together.
We're doing some work in the UK, and that's one of their primary, that's the focal point in their transformation of schools, is the furniture and the rooms. It's one of the things that they're adamant about addressing that, and they're actually coming up with some very innovative solutions, but they're adamant about addressing furniture because they say you can do everything else that we're talking about, but then if you put the wrong furniture in there, then all of a sudden you're back to a mindset of how students and teachers are going to work together that sets the stage for how that interaction is going to take place in the learning center. So this may be one that's a little bit more expensive for you, but every time you have the opportunity, you want to be thinking about how you can trade that stuff out, right? There's no rule. TEA doesn't have a law that says you have to have desks, right? You can do what you want with that. So just thinking about some lightweight solutions, and we're going to show you an example of that in a little bit. So interactivity. Okay, so here's what I want you to do. Think about a school-age child that you know. Could be a student, a kid, a grandkid, somebody that you know, all right? You have that person in your mind? So now I want you to think about what is some of the technology they have available to them that you did not have available to you, and share that with your neighbor for a minute. Okay, so let's hear some of them. What were some things you said? Cell phones. What else? What else do they have available? What? Laptop. iPod. Yep. Air conditioning. Hey, somebody else said air conditioning. Awesome. No one said indoor plumbing, right? So, if you think about the things that they have available, and you think about how those devices are used, it's all about interactivity, right? It's all about, and technology is not the only way to interact with the environment. This is one example of the way that students today are used to creating their own environment, their own little micro-environment. And a lot of times they can use their devices to do that. The iPod is customized. They don't have to listen to whatever comes on the radio, right? They can, or even just whatever they bought on that 8-track tape. They actually can get whatever music they want and put that together and flip to it and have all of that they want. Because they can create that. And then obviously also they have their little smart devices, whatever those may be, that they can jump out and get information from anywhere, right? So they're creating, again, an environment that has a little bit of blurred boundaries. They're interacting with that. And so I think it's just important for us to remember that, again, in their environment. Then do they come into the environment and we say, okay, now let's power down, shut all that off, unplug, and, you know, focus on this one person that is going to be the, you know, keeper of all knowledge. So how are we making that environment powerful for them and that they're able to interact? And not just with technology, but to collaborate with each other. Because those great minds sharing together can learn a lot also. So those are the five, right? You want to talk about that?
I am.
Yeah, okay.
So what can all this look like? We're going to run through a series of things.
If you want. Anybody have questions so far over what we've...
All right. So anyways, we're going to talk about show a few examples of what this can look like, kind of weaving some of these different components and factors together. And for instance, the classroom here, as you can see, very lightweight furniture on wheels. So a novel idea, wheels on furniture, integrated lighting, natural light, multiple teaching surfaces. This classroom can be reconfigured on the fly, and it also opens up, one thing we haven't talked about in terms of interactivity and hands-on learning, is that the space goes right out to a rain garden and learning garden. So that classroom goes right outside to take advantage of the environment within that space. Again, color, yes, and that is snow outside. Color in a classroom, and again, talking about light, eye fatigue and the like. The impact of natural lighting, of course, within a space. This we put in here, that blue light is actually fluorescent lamps, again, with a color sleeve. And this way, it's essentially what we call a poor man's dimming system, which allows multiple fluorescents on a dimming system to change colors in all the spectrums. So, just again, that $15 color sleeve with a dimming system can do a tremendous amount of different changes to an environment. As you can see here, there's actually a ceiling in the midst of all that. That's not a very high space, actually. And you can see the impact of color and how it changes that environment, all through lighting. Paint, again, we talked about that within a classroom. And furniture. The beanbag is just as viable piece of furniture as this chair or any collaborative table. And as you can see in today's learners, the idea of collaboration, being able to recreate your environment very quickly, very comfortably, with the opportunity of having wireless environments, some place to plug your laptop in or your device, as the laptop most likely go away, are the parts of a successful learning environment, at least an informal learning environment.
How many of you, when you were thinking about the space you like to learn in, how many of you had more informal type seating? Or furniture. Okay. How many of you it was formal? Kind of straight desk, chair. Okay. Except for some of you it didn't matter.
Again, one of the things that's important about furniture is its ease of use and lightness. This is not an ad from a furniture company, believe it or not. This is actually one of our environments. But these pieces of furniture with a tablet on them, they're easy to move. They have a handle on them that tell people, you know what, you can move that thing. And you can slide them together and work as a group. Again, a lightweight furniture, taking advantage of in-between spaces. In spaces that are not classroom, it's kind of that threshold space where people want to drop down and just have a conversation. In the old days, we used to talk about replicating the drinking fountain or the coffee pot in an office, right? Those are the spaces where learning really happens, where conversation happens. And to provide a little place to sit, and you're going to see an example of that later today, with furniture from IKEA. I mean, this does not have to be a $10,000 piece of furniture, or $5,000 even.
It shouldn't.
$100. It shouldn't. Yeah.
And that is, like the lady said, without building a new building. This is a way to give the message to your students, to your learners coming into the building, that this is a place where we want you to collaborate. This is a place where learning happens all over the building, not just when you're sitting in math class. And you can do that in in-between spaces that are already there. Look around for them in the building. And putting some of this lightweight furniture that can move together and sit collaboratively. And if you buy something cheap like from IKEA, then if they are doing something to the furniture that you don't want them to do, then you know you haven't risked that much of an investment. But it does send a message right away.
One thing I just wanted to add to that one is you can see on the image of the right, that's that chalkboard. Right? A place to just scribble, and when I talk about this a little bit, scribble and share and write and create. The next notion is, how do you capture that? That's something that we've lost, right, from the previous generations of learning. Again, in between spaces, spaces that open up and fold into a variety of other things. Again, being able to bring furniture together in a wireless environment in that case. This is an example of just taking the same classroom, fully integrated in terms of lighting controls, teaching surfaces, projection, and looking at how the same furniture can create four different or multiple different teaching and pedagogical arrangements, from teams to seminar to a lecture style. And so that idea of the notion of memory and place is important. This should just roll through. So again, same thing, taking an elementary school classroom and looking at how you can reconfigure those spaces. One of the things with furniture, of course, is you need a place to put it if you're not using it, right? Or you buy furniture that can be many, many tables and chairs that stack and nest up and move to the side. So it allows you flexibility within that space. The idea of nest and a place of comfort and safe is something that harkens back to the questions we asked when you walked in. But where is that place that you go? And what does that look like? Is it the little guy in the box, right? It went there for a reason. It's not only play. It's one of the best play, right? As we all know, every holiday, that is the most effective toy we have. But it's a place of comfort, isn't it? just as these, as you can see. These are all learning environments and little nests and little places to hide away and to find comfort, as much as our little forts that all of our kids have built and grandkids have built.
And again, these can happen in a corner. These can happen somewhere in the space that's already there, but just thinking about creating some spaces like that where kids are going to go. You know, Starbucks did a great thing, right? When they said, okay, where do people want to be? What do they want it to look like? Barnes & Noble, same thing. They created these spaces. And if we can think about that in our learning environments, creating some spaces like this that kids want to be, and there's obvious implications also here for students with special needs. Sometimes they need a place to block everything out, but it shouldn't be a cubicle, right, that looks like a punitive situation. If it's a place like this, then it's very different. They can choose it when they need it, it's available, and it's attractive.
The idea of personalizing your space is profoundly important to all of us. These are actually examples of spaces that are being developed with our work in the UK. The bottom right is actually something that Steelcase experimented with a few years ago, as a contemporary yurt, if you will. It's a meeting place where people could come together and have almost a cocoon-like. The interesting thing here, the color changed as you walked into that space. Depending on how many people were in there, the LED color changed and almost pulsed in a way, depending on activities and things. And then the table is actually a huge pad of paper, which is really terrific, right? So you just rip it off, it's a big sticky back, take your notes and run away with them. The fort, the idea of the fort, these are my colleagues on the right, you know, so our meetings are a little difficult typically, but the treehouse is a wonderful environment, right? It's a great learning environment. It's a place that you made your own. And so, and there's a lot of examples of that same idea. Here on the right, just take, in this case, was a facility that took shipping containers and turned them into meetings rooms. You know, very simple, very ingenious idea, as well as the space in the middle here is a seminar room collaboration space within a given learning environment. So again, creating these what we call micro-environments, these little places that you make your own, and as Shannon said, in these in-between spaces. This, again, was just that. It was a found spot within a building where we created a little niche, a little place for people to hang out and relax and get away from the noise of the day-to-day of the facility. Again, here you can see it creates this U-shaped everywhere from workbenches where you can plug in your work to beanbags to places you can just hide in a couch. Now, we mostly think, I'm sure all of you here think of Scribble just as that, right, in the bathrooms. But the idea of Scribble and drawing is innate to us as human beings in terms of communication. And so if it starts with the chalk on the sidewalk to painting, but as I mentioned earlier, the most important part of it is how you capture that, right? There's very simple technologies today that capture that, so you don't lose all that energy that was on the chalkboard or the marker board. For instance, this device here on the upper left is a device from Polyvision that is a simple push, a single button. The image, it captures the image on a marker board or a wall or a chalkboard, and it becomes a PDF JPEG and goes right to your server. Or you can print it right there. And so you never lose that energy. Right? That's the essence of collaboration and sharing, is sharing. And in that way, that's what we want. Chalkboard paint, believe it or not. Right? An environment with chalkboard paint, you can turn it and totally transform that space into something that's allows for sharing and collaboration.
And again, you're sending a message, right? You've got a space, you put the chalkboard paint up, it's like, this is a space for you to think, because we think through writing a lot of times. So this is a place for you to work together, think, that it starts to create this learning on display idea in your building when you're, you know, even you can use the glass chalk, they call it, you know, for the glasses in the building. Why not let them write on that surface? Why not? And then you start to create this idea of learning on display. So this building is about learning. And people are seeing people's thinking models on the walls, on the windows. It really creates a different kind of energy, like Jeff said, in that space. It's all about, this is not a sterile environment where learning happens in a little spot that it's everywhere.
The other thing I wanted to add here is floor to ceiling.
Yeah.
Right? You're not saying it's a 3x6 place. That's the only place you can be creative. Right? I think you remember the movie Beautiful Mind. Right, with Russell Crowe writing on the windows at the library in Princeton. You know, the same idea. You want to be able to write and share and scribble everywhere, but you want to provide that opportunity for them. Again, just another example on the exterior of a building, being able to do that. Make it intentional.
Right.
interactivity. This is where we're going to roll through a variety of different things, from technologies to, again, writing surfaces and like a variety of different technologies are available, just bringing common laptops together and they interface onto a screen, a little bit more expensive. This may not be the quick fix, but I wanted to share this. This is a product called CityWall. It's in Helsinki. It's 16 meters long, and it is an enormous iPhone, essentially. It is a natural interface screen. And so it goes immediately on the web. You can slide it and share ideas across the thing. So right in the middle of downtown Helsinki is this huge interface. And people use it every day to play, to share, to actually look up information, to share information. And so that technology we know from our little iPhones is right around the corner. Right? It's a teaching tool. This is an extraordinary, well, you'll know it, the CNN Election Center, if you remember, with Wolf, you know. That was the same technology. So soon enough, right, it'll go out of the hands of Helsinki and great cities around the world and CNN to us. And so you think about how technology does that. How do you create an environment that allows for full engagement and collaboration? One of the things we did here in some of our partnerships with folks like Steelcase and Herman Miller is we understand the height of a table changes your engagement and how your body changes. And so if you're sitting at 30 inches on the traditional conference table, you're kind of lounging and kind of reposed. If you're higher, it changes the way you interact with people.
Also, the way that people are able to see eye contact around the table, the proximity that you are, the number of... So all of those things, I'm working with some schools on the East Coast that have used this idea of the Harkness table. I don't know if anyone's heard of that, but they built this table that's exactly the right size for 12 people to sit around and have a conversation where everybody can see everybody else's eyes in the conversation. It just changes the way you're interacting. So again, just thinking about that and the way that we're organizing our collaboration spaces.
And again, the ideas of color, of fluid space, of lightweight furniture, of technology, and being able to create your own environment within that, whether it's taking advantage of little niches and things like this on the lower right and the lower left from just little ottomans. You have a place you can move, it's easy to sit down and have a conversation, to the computer stations on the right.
So, Jeff, is that light or paint or what?
It is both. The floor in that is very, very heavily saturated red. Mm-hmm. Then this is actually this is a curtain wall with windows with a very thin, just film on it.
So the film you roll up and use at your house. And there's just hundreds of different colors.
If you just think about an environment in the school right now, you think about making it look like that, what's the impact going to be? How's that going to set a tone and a mood differently in that space for not very much money, right?
And again, while we're talking about interaction, think about things outside of what you know as education. Think of the notion of the Genius Bar and Apple Store, one of the most collaborative places probably in North America, at least not in the world. And how can those engagements, peer-to-peer learning, happen within your spaces? Same idea. How do you take spaces with multiple functions, create ideas for collaboration? And again, this is actually a project we're finishing in Dubai, which is actually from Michigan State. But it was an idea of creating places between the classrooms where people could come. And the idea was to make the place sticky. You want students to stay there so they can share ideas, right, and relax between classes. Same thing. And again, taking areas outside of classrooms, these in-between spaces, creating a little, this was actually the notion of using archives and exhibit of the school as a definer of a place, and throw some very lightweight furniture into it.
That's another great idea, is the whole bulletin board idea, that making it more purposeful in the halls of the school, making that display more purposeful and well-designed, put that learning on display.
Again, the ideas of natural light, color, lightweight furniture, transparency into classrooms, and a variety of things.
I want to share with you, and Tabitha Branham is on our list, that her child got sick and she's not able to come with us. So we're sad that she's not here. If you came here just to see Tabitha, I should have told you that at the beginning so you can see, because she's not going to be here with us today. But what I want to share with you for a minute is just this exact same idea and what happened in transforming a space in Kapel for a new technology high school. I was actually a assistant superintendent in the district when we started this process of a committee to look at how can we create a different type of learning environment, a different type of teacher-learner interaction. And we researched, and I can answer questions specifically about new tech if anyone has those at the end or after the session, but we researched and looked around and we found this concept that was replicatable. Because they have a replication model, and we said, this is what we want. We went into a lot of classrooms all over the U.S., and pretty much in every classroom, regardless of what the structure was supposed to be, with career academy, whatever it was, when we walked in, it was still the same type of student-teacher role. You know, still, kids were not engaged, like the lady was mentioning back there. When we went in these classrooms in these schools, there's about 50 of them in the nation right now, when we went in these classrooms, the kids were engaged because they were driving the learning. The whole role of student and teacher had changed. And so this is just an example of how we tried to create a space to support that type of learning. It's project-based learning is one of the words, or your problem-based learning or project learning, you hear those terms. Basically what it is students driving the learning from a problem. This is what ended up happening is we had an elementary school. We had some declining enrollment in elementary, and a large population at the high school, and the population at the high school, we needed to find a way to reduce that. We had talked about a ninth grade center, we talked about a lot of things, and we decided to do a choice school. So this is a public school in the system that is a choice school that kids starting in the ninth grade can choose to go over and go to this smaller setting instead. We had an elementary that we needed to close, and so rather than spend the money to build a building, like she said, we had SHW come in, excuse me, and renovate this elementary. So this is the before. This is the library before it was renovated. And you see murals and, you know, obviously kind of traditional-looking library. And this is the library after. Same space, exact same walls, but obviously they look different. This is the furniture from IKEA that Jeff was mentioning. The principal, Tabitha, actually went to IKEA and got the boxes and carried it back. You know, this was not expensive. Her and her secretary brought the boxes in and opened it up and unfolded it and put the stuff together. So this is their library. So these are all these spaces. I was there not too long ago, and it was a really neat thing to see because there were some fourth grade students that had come over. One of the projects that they were working on, that the sophomores were working on, was to create some interactive software games for math based on the math text for fourth graders. So they brought fourth graders over to the building, and they were in this library together so that the high school students were interviewing the fourth grade students. And if you could have seen, I wish I had a shot of that, but I don't do as good a job taking pictures everywhere like Jeff does, but there were kids sitting on the backs of chairs, you know, young kids sitting on the backs of chairs and older students sitting down here talking to them, and they were just all around on the floor and everywhere around this furniture, and it was just the perfect to see that in that setting. It was like, perfect. That's exactly, you know, it would have been very different if they were sitting at those tables, right, with all the, so it was just a great environment for that, and obviously, and did you have a question, ma'am? Yes. Well, Chad, you want to answer that question? their IT person is right here in the room. Do you want to answer that question for
him? Sure. There are notebooks in this campus. Everything is digital, electronic. And as a part of the New Tech Foundation, there's a learning system that houses all the resources and projects and the discussion collaborative environment for the school.
Yeah. You can't see it in this shot, but over here around the corner, you can see the server room, which is glassed in, that you can see access to all that, too. And then there are also some shelves over here that you can't see that books could be stored on, but there are not any now. This is the front entrance to the building, and this is the new entrance to the building. You see some collaboration spaces there, and I'll show you some more. These are classrooms. You see the furniture. I'm not sure if you can see it, but it's kind of these triangle little tables that can be wheeled together. Again, very lightweight, and then there's collaboration space throughout the building. Again, didn't change the size of the corridors, put bigger bodies in there, right, than were there before. Didn't change the size of the corridors because we couldn't, it was a renovation, but found ways to make collaboration space throughout those corridors, even with bigger bodies. There's some more examples of that and how they're working together. And there are students, we were just there last week again, and there are students everywhere in this building that are working together all the time. That's the feeling you feel when you're in the building. A couple quotes I wanted to share with you. There was a student that had gone to this school as an elementary school student and then chose to come back to the high school there, to New Tech High. And she just said, it's so cool to see how the elementary that I was in now has basically been transformed to this high school. It's a completely different environment. You can feel it, you know, when you walk in the door. So that was a neat thing. And then Tabitha was sharing with us when we were there just last week that their attendance rate at a high school is 99.8%. That's money, right? It's called ADA. It's like the kids want to come to school here. They can feel it when they walk in the door. They want to come to school here. They like it here. They feel comfortable. They're learning. And they even hold each other accountable for showing up. But they want to be there. And she just says, you know, we couldn't be more pleased about the way the space supports what our goals are for this and how the students want to be a part of that. And they stay afterwards. They won't go home. They want to stay there. So
I think just to add, we talk quite often about new learning patterns and pedagogical missions and things, but I think one of the things we wanted to talk about today and remind us of are the qualitative things that we're talking about that are inherent in all of us that are very, very traditional. The ideas of comfort and light and place. And those are things, as we go forward, are terrific partners for new learning spaces and new ideas about learning. So those are things we just don't want to lose short, that indeed the physical environment truly can be a tool for learning and collaboration.
Yes?
Shannon, just got a question. When we've been involved in projects like this, we found that the building, it becomes clear to the kids that there's a different expectation from them. You have an environment from where we had a really big hurdle was getting staff beyond the administration to understand that there's a different expectation of the adults, and just kind of the timeline that you need to go through to make sure that you get trickle down to help you recruit the kind of people who are going to buy into it, as well as that kind of broad-based assessment that you're doing things differently.
That's a great question. I'll start, and then if you want. I'm working on a project in Washington, D.C. right now, East Wilson High School. And that kind of, I don't know if you know the school, but it's called the Tower of Power. It's like a big penitentiary building right now. And it's being completely transformed to this idea of collaborative space and all that. One of the things that we're doing that's really important, FHW is doing, is making sure that the environment is flexible enough to bring teachers along. Regardless of what you do up front, one thing I'll say is that, you know, from having staff in a building, everybody's in a different place, just like the learners are. So being able to make the environment flexible so that some things can happen in the way that the teachers can still function, and we can move them, evolve them to this new type of environment. But you're right, the culture is set right when you walk in the building. Another thing that we've talked a lot about is doing an owner's manual idea. And Jeff, you can probably talk more about that. But working with the teachers that come into a new environment in a professional development, you know, we all have to do professional development prior to school starting, but opening the building like that with this interaction with the teachers about how you use these learning spaces and what that's going to look like and how we can help you with that and continue to evolve that, which you need to happen more than just once, right? Because you're going to have turnover probably in that first couple years. Quite a bit. And this is when you're talking on a wide scale, right? You can do any of this stuff on a smaller scale when you're talking about full scale things with it.
Yeah, the only thing I wanted to mention is the notion of institutional evolution. Right? We talk a lot about not only here and all of our projects in the States, but particularly with our work in the UK. Particularly to them, their school funding started with rebuilt schools in 46, right after the war, fixed them up a little bit, did some refurbishment in the 70s, and hasn't done much since, so you can imagine. And so one of the biggest factors is about how do you create environments that are agile, that can evolve with the institution as they grow. Because you're not going to go from straight scholasticism to highly collaborative overnight. Right? And so part of that is creating an environment that can evolve with the institution. And it should be part of that mission. As we talk about with a variety of districts and institutions and learning education authorities and things like that around the world, it's just that. It's aligning where you are today with where you want to go with the physical environment. And one of the notions is the owner's manual. How do I use this? If you really think about the building or the environment as a tool, as a machine, as opposed to something you just occupy, right? It's just as important as the owner manual of your laptop or of the smartphone.
I think your question is such a good one, too, because what we're seeing happen, like at this school in Kabul, and like the other one that comes to mind is the one in Kurdistan, Iraq, which obviously there's that's a huge transformation, right? Transition from a move that is going to be a model of how they do education there. But they're not all going to be there at the beginning. But one of the things that does happen, like in the school of Pompeo, is the teachers that are attracted to that type of learning are going to want to come to work there. You've got a recruiting tool now. When you create a space like that, you've got a recruiting tool now that no one else can compete with, because they're going to be attracted to that. So you will see that, some, you know, hopefully you're evolving the teachers as well, but then you're going to start to see teachers attracted to that. You're able to recruit those kind of teachers that are going to match it. One other question? Yes, sir.
What's the capacity
of the middle school and the high school? It will be, well, right now it's two phases. So they've done phase one, then they waited, they're actually, phase two's not finished, right? It's close. Finished? Okay, that's right. So that it's going to be 500 kids at the high school. And what was the check? Was it five?
Yeah,
we
capped around 500.
But that's an elementary school?
It's an elementary.
What was it?
It
yeah, I think it was about the same number. We've changed, but one thing that we didn't talk about, but in this particular space, we changed the size of the classrooms. We made the classrooms double size classrooms because they're integrated courses, which is what the more new HD was in high school, too. One of the ways to create this kind of evolution to more real types of learning is being able to offer integrated courses. And the only way to do that, obviously, you're not going to find a lot of dual certified teachers. So one way to do that is double size classrooms, two teachers co-teaching. Integrating those courses. Now that's transformational. You'll see a big difference in students and how they're responding to content in that situation. So that's one of the things we did was make the classrooms double size. The furniture in there is able to utilize that space in a more efficient way, also, because it's movable and changeable. So her question is, what kind of factors go into designing a space that can adapt to a lot of different learning styles? And I'll say that one of the things is that I didn't customize, I mean, as a teacher, I couldn't customize to each individual student. So what I like to talk about is just leveling the playing field, right? So making sure there was enough variety in there that everybody at some point or another had a really good preference. But with lighting and some of those things, you can obviously fix different parts of the room, and with furniture, different parts of the room, to create those preferences like this, talking about in that and some of those things. But
I think it really starts with understanding what you want to do first, right? What's the mission? As a coach, I think what's happened, the previous construct is always the architect did a building, right? And force you in the notion of build pedagogy to build, you know, this classroom and this setup or this space, you can only do one thing, right? And so the first step is really to have that, open that conversation about this is our mission, these are notions, our beliefs about pedagogy and curriculum. And then from that, sculpt the space, or sculpt the quiet furniture and the color and all of those things. But it has to start there first. Right? It's an institutional mission to curriculum and pedagogy.
That's really what we do. We try to work with the educators to say, what is the mission for learning? What are you trying to do? That also helps with not just blindsiding everybody, but here's a whole new way of doing it. And getting everybody involved in that conversation, we can translate that and design it into what that looks like. Questions? Well, you know, our contact information on the bottom of that. What I'd like for you to think about is just what's your first step? What are you going to go out and do? Paint something? Paint the lighting? I don't know. Get some IKEA furniture? Whatever it is, what are you going to do next? Thank you for being here. If you did not get a handout, we have some more up here. You can come up and pick one up.